Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Provincial State of Mind. Myself, Owen Harfin, Jeff Neville and Tom Savage. This is a podcast focused on all four Irish provincial sides in both the URC and European competitions. We discussed what happened the previous weekend and what we can expect from each province in their upcoming games, as well as any major off-field news.
Can we talk about how Owen messed up his own name?
Botched the read of his own name.
Owen Harfin. Harfin?
Owen Harfin? Owen Harfin. Who is that guy? Man of mystery.
I need to get more coffee into me. I blame the assistants. I'm throwing too much this week.
You've thrown like more coffee into their faces than you have drank.
He actually wants to drink it, but it's, do you know what, the muscle memory. Just that.
Flinging at them.
Well, I'm back.
So major news this week is Tom Savage is back. So Tom, what's the big news in your life?
I've had a baby. Well, my partner has. I was there. I observed. And it's a complete game changer. So it is. Everything's very different. It seems like I'm a different guy.
I bet you'd drink that butter coffee now if it was offered to you, wouldn't you?
But you know what? I've been saying to this. Like, people are going, oh, the tiredness will get you. It's just like, I was a functioning insomniac for years. This is fine. This is okay. But yeah, it's mad. Like, having this little person here. We were convinced it was a boy. Convinced it was a boy. And we went back. And do you know why we thought that? Because we went on holidays to Portugal and herself went for a pregnancy massage. And the Portuguese massage therapist who was there was an older lady. So she had this kind of air of wisdom about her. And she looked at her and she goes, he's definitely a boy.
Well, if you can't trust Portuguese and old women masseuses, who can you trust? Exactly.
That you've never met.
So we were just like, she seemed pretty certain. She seemed like she knew things. So we were just fully convinced that it was a boy. Fully convinced all the way. Every single thing that the baby in the bump did, kicked a bit hard, he's at it again. But yeah, girl. So when the doctor kind of pulled her up over the curtain thing, she was just like, it's your daughter. And I was just like, what? it's what?
You mean the Portuguese masseuse woman was wrong?
He's like, if I can't trust a Portuguese masseuse in a resort hotel, who can I trust? But the baby is healthy. So is my partner. I am obsessed with this baby. I'm looking at her, I'm just going, you know, the other day, right, I was doing some washing, right, and I had this thought pop into my head. I'd better close the door behind me now, because what if a rat ran into the house and bit her? I'd never forgive myself, and I've never thought of it, like, as in, a rat could run in. So that's where I'm at now, Googling ridiculous things, worrying nonstop, and I've got this to look forward to for the rest of my life. And it's good. I'm looking forward to it.
Is it difficult? Blessing. Is it difficult being the third tallest person in your household now? Or what's the crack?
Excuse me. you lads now have been dropping bombs into the WhatsApp over the last couple of weeks. Let me reiterate here. I think you said it on the podcast as well, but I never listened to any of these podcasts. I am the tallest man here. If we're talking about
that doesn't change because there's only two women now in the house with you. He's still the tallest man there.
Body. I am the man on this podcast who has the tallest body.
I have the longest torso.
The tallest body in this podcast. But to be fair, I think my daughter will probably be taller than me. A 6'3" daughter, an inch taller than me, that would be something. But I think it's going to happen. I'm around 6'3".
Yeah.
Height-wise.
If I had hair, I would be. High shoes.
My body is 6'3". Yeah, that's there kind of trying to lord it over me. But you're doing it with hair, which is not different. My body is taller than me.
I love this aspirational height stuff.
There's photographic evidence of it, of just how lording it over the tubia was.
Just how long your body is.
Tell you what. I'm all about, because like we can't process babies, right? So we're talking about like what weight are they and how long is the baby? So that's what we're doing here. Who is the biggest and tallest, and it's me.
Owen Harrison, how was your week?
My week was all right. Busy enough. Yeah. Dealing with, what you call it? It was my daughter's birthday. Well, it's her birthday actually tomorrow. So we had the party at the weekend, so I had to deal with screaming kids running around the place and things like that. So that was...
Getting into your thing.
Yeah, getting them ready for Fight Club season, starting up pretty soon.
They're chomping at the bit.
No cake, just chicken fillets.
Oh, you want to give them the sugar rush just before they go out and fight.
Oh, yeah, get him. Get that bloodlust.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just that the red mist descend.
Do you know what? I was thinking afterwards last week, I could have actually done the podcast last week because I was stuck in the car park doing that whole thing where you wait outside the hospital. Did you have to do that? You probably did, Jeff. Did you?
No. I was allowed in. No, I was during, I don't know, one of the lockdowns. I can't remember which one, but there was visiting hours and that was fine. And then I was allowed in then only for certain hours, then after the baby was born, kind of a thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's still the same.
But then, like, I just kind of didn't leave, you know, that kind of way.
Yes. Yeah, like, what if I just, I know the times are the times, but what if I just stayed here?
Yeah.
What if I never leave?
I did stay there, and the nurse came back about an hour later, and she was like, she was so angry with me, like, and I was kind of, look, you're right. I know you did tell me to leave. I'm just going to ask, would you leave if this was you? And she was like, okay. But can you leave now, please? And I was like, no, you're right. I have taken the piss enough here. Like, I will leave. But
she basically gave you a red card and you were just like,
yeah, okay. Sent me off on my way.
All right, okay, fair enough. We go to the sighting. Fair enough.
But I know you've had a kid, Tom, and everything, and that's big. And Owen, you've had a big day throwing coffee and stuff. I can't find my wallet.
Oh, no.
And
I hate that.
Like, I usually leave it in my jacket pocket or, you know, somewhere like that, like normal, I suppose, but I just cannot find it anywhere. Now, I will admit, I've only been looking since this afternoon and I haven't really looked
that
hard.
That's a long time for your wallet to be missing.
I'm just like, please don't be
missing. Fun fact, I have never lost a wallet or keys or phone ever. So I feel the horror that you're feeling because I could never imagine that happening.
It's not even the horror of losing it, like whatever. It's just, to go cancel everything and redo stuff. I'm just really not in that mood. So if someone finds it, I might just let them have my life for a little while.
There you go.
Just if you're going to tap, just keep it under. If you're going to tap, just don't take the piss.
Yeah, there's a few bills coming.
Like just take my life for a little while to like figure out this out or find the energy to revamp my whole life around this. But it's not even that. Like when you get, do you know when you get a new card, you have to like put it on to, let's say, the things you're paying bills off already on that card.
Yeah,
it's not from the account, it's off the card. And if you cancel the card, oh, it's just, I'm not in the humor for it, to be honest. So I'm really, really hoping it just kind of shows up because I'm not really in the humor to look for it either. So
what if a rat ran off for it?
There's the two of us in it, you know, there's me in the wallet. So one's gone missing, one's not arsed. So there's the two of us in it, I suppose.
Just imagine the same rat who was going to try and run into my house is after stealing your wallet.
He's going to steal my wallet. And then he's going to run down to your house and be like, hey, you want to go buy some sweets?
And it's like, only up to 50 euro. Or,
do you want to go spend his
password?
Do you want to go spend Jeff's money?
We can tap. Let's get some sweets.
We can tap up to 50 every day.
Up to 50 every day. I think he'll be okay with this. I think he'll be fine with that.
Every now and again, we're going to have to, you know, buy groceries so nobody catches on to our ploy here. But
yeah, if it's just sweets, he'll know it's me. Look, if it's a rat, if it's just me buying rubbish and garbage, Chanty, you know, quick. It was a rat who took it. I need to feed my 8,000 children. Please, I'm just a single rat with 8,000 children.
Owen, take hold of this, please.
Oh, right, we'll move on to the rugby then. We'll start with Wales against Ireland. Ireland won 34-10 in Cardiff, first win in 10 years. as we pointed out, well, we pointed out it was 10 years since the last one last week. And thanks for everyone who stayed around for the 5 minutes while we looked it up.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Really, really exciting. Suspenseful.
Thrilling podcasting. You can hear the keyboard clacking.
But what's worse is it was like 2017. No, it wasn't then.
No.
And then like
2015. No.
It wasn't even like a
2013, answer. Yeah. It was very exciting. You'll have to listen back to it, Tom.
I will be sure to do that.
Boost our listener numbers.
They do not need to be boosted.
Anything,
they're gangbusters.
They need to slow down.
You just slow down. I'm sick of all these people listening to me.
People stop listening, please.
Like, move on to the players, guys.
Sorry, yeah. Okay, let's go.
An excellent start from Ireland. I thought they were pretty much flawless for about the first 10 or 15 minutes. Really got a couple of tries up. There was Wales didn't help themselves by giving sort of easy access into their 22 when Ireland took full advantage. And then Wales just coughed up mistakes. Ireland, like the breakaway try for Lowe and things like that. Game was over before halftime. And then Wales, they caused Ireland problems in that sort of third quarter, but Ireland never looked under pressure. In ways, it reminded me almost of teams playing Leinster. And what I mean by that is, you look at how hard it was for Wales to score. The effort that they had to put in to get into the 22, first of all, and then to actually breach the Irish line. And they were expending so much energy to try and do that with such little reward. And then Ireland just seemed to have that killer touch when they needed to. And the sort of that clinical ability just to score. But then again, I think there's also parts of it that Ireland will be disappointed in. I think their exiting from the 22 and their game management at times was just dreadful. Whether it's some of the box kicking, whether it's some of the clearance kicking, you know, it wasn't just from the box kicking from nine. I mean, there was some desperate, I think, decision-making from Sexton to go for that crossfield kick to Omani. There was missed touches from the likes of James Lowe. And that they just didn't get there. But Wales never threatened Ireland. And I think part of that is due to the fast start. Gatland's teams are not there to chase a game. He's never set up like that. And I think that really played out on it this week. What did you make of the game, Jeff?
I enjoyed it. As a contest like that, yeah, I thought, you know, a little bit of me was thinking like, okay, Ireland could put 40 on Wales here, you know. But good and bad. I think Wales, as the game went on, like, it could have been a very different game had Wales capitalized on chances that they created and exploited things that they had created. But Ireland did well to hold them out at the same time. Lowe's try, I felt, was very good. That intercept, like, it was a really good defensive read and off he went. Caelan Doris's try, very good for me. That James Ryan carry just beforehand, like, what a carry. I felt, was it the Welsh six? Who hit him in the carry, who was initially hitting Ryan, let's say. Like, he had a lot of body to hit there and probably should have done better, but like, Ryan was really strong in that carry. He had a few very big carries in that game, which was good to see. And then, like, I mean, there was no stopping Doris from, like, it was essentially a yard out, like, when he got the ball. But probably the try of, probably my favorite try was probably Josh van der Fleer's, just because of the workload. Like, if you look back at it, there's about, I don't know, 7-8 rucks ish, whatever. But and there's a very tasty offload from Dan Sheehan and Mac Hansen in the build up as well off touchline. But like, if you just watch Van der Fleer, and obviously you get to, it's easy to watch him because of the headgear. But like, just the number of rucks he attends. Now, he's not always like heavily involved in said rucks, but like, he's there just in case. But he's at so many. And then for Casey, just gives a pass to a pod off nine and then kind of scoots around. And it's Van der Fleer who was involved in the ruck previous to that pass that scoots around that again and just gets set. And Ross Burns, you know, call him for the same their space. But I mean, like, Josh Van der Fleer just gets in untouched. Like, he had a fabulous game. It was strange to see him lose a turnover penalty to Wales off a mall, and we'll probably get to that in a little while. But I felt overall he had a fabulous game, just really worked really, really well. But again, I think Ireland will probably be a bit disappointed with the drop off, you know, in that second half, and you can't really afford to do that against Wales either, like, or against France. Sorry.
The mid block of the game, I think Ireland would be gutted with, just because it was all lined up for Ireland to dominate the rest of that game, put a big score on Wales. I was very surprised with Wales' approach to the game. Very surprised. I was full sure that they would strip back a lot of what Wayne Pivac had been doing. So when I saw Wales looking very like the Wayne Pivac team from November and before, which I suppose is to be expected, I wrote a bit there on my own site looking back at this game that we look back at Munster this year about how Munster kind of had a choice between gradual change, incremental change over the season, or flash fry the frog, throw it into the boiling oil, see what happens, and build from there. I was full sure that Gatland would start stripping back a lot of the Welsh game, but they didn't. It was a bit more gradual, and I thought Wales's kicking game was poor and cost them early on. Ireland's kicking game, certainly early on, was really, really good. And I was just a bit disappointed with Wales with their approach. Like, I just think looking at how Ireland approached that opening 10 minutes, like, not many teams live in Ireland in that opening 10 minutes, I think. I think nobody does, but it's about keeping that up for the full 80. That's kind of the kind of performance I think that would win Ireland the World Cup if we were to get to that level. But I think looking at that opening 10 minutes, or 15, 20 minutes, that was really good. And Wales had nothing for Ireland there, nothing. And like as you said there, Jeff, Josh van der Fleer's breakdown work, absolutely superb for the full 80 minutes. Peter O'Mahony took a lot of flack on, what was this, Virgin Media? I don't know what it was. I was delirious with tiredness at that stage. It looked like a really bad business meeting anyway, where the lads were just sick shit of each other. And they were going on about Peter O'Mahony. It's like, Peter O'Mahony was, by the calculations that I put together with breakdown, when he went off, was the second most effective breakdown guy in the field behind van der Fleer when he went off in 60 minutes. And by the end, he was still in the top three, and he only did 60 minutes. So, I don't know.
Just on
ESPN stats, though.
Your point on the kicking game, I actually thought Wales kicked quite well, to be honest with you. And Sam Larner on Twitter kind of doubled down on my thinking, and he had a thread on it. Like, they only kicked 13 from play. So, I mean, from that 13 from play, there was 4 in their 22. There was 5 inside, or let's say between their 22 and the 10. And then there was only 4 kicks in total outside their 10. But of those kicks, there was only 5 that weren't either won by Wales marks or weren't kicked back to Wales. And 3 of them were inside their own 22. So, I mean, it wasn't that... I don't think Wales' kicking game left them down. I think it was actually just their defensive shape at times, to be honest. And I suppose lack of reading in regards. For Lowe's intercept, there's 2 players in front of him and they actually both split on the pass. And sure, Lowe was able to just come through the middle there and pick that pass. And it's a good read by Lowe, don't get me wrong. I'm not underselling it. Like, there's very few people who would be able to do it. But I think it was little things like that that left Wales down and kind of ruined their game early, rather than actually just kind of kicking the ball, to be honest. I hate to argue with you, but
for me, my thinking on it is that I thought that Wales would kick longer than what they did. They had a short enough kicking game for this one. I think they ranked, I think it was 4th in the Six Nations over the weekend for kicking distance, and they also didn't have a whole lot of variety. So it was mostly kicking off Tomas Williams. He was their main kicking platform. And then you have bigger. When you look at Ireland, though, you see Sexton. I think his ball handling percentage was 79%. So he was kicking a lot of his possessions, relatively speaking. Same with James Lowe, kicking off a lot of his possessions. Conor Murray kicked very well, I felt. And I thought that level of variety where Ireland were able to go contestable, short in that mid-range, but also go longer, I felt Wales struggled to kind of live with that. And their kicking game kind of came back to a more shorter style, and then they went to a few chip kicks later in the game. But I felt that kind of led them. It like when Hugo Keenan was taking those contestables, eating them up all day, I felt that left Wales with kind of nowhere to go, and they maybe should have tried to lengthen the game a little bit longer. That's why I felt it let them down in that regard. Just in like it kind of played into Ireland's counter transition game a little bit easier from a Welsh perspective. But I just thought that like that was my reasoning behind the kicking thing. But I think looking at overall, I think Wales, it's probably a good time to play them. I think they'll be better by the end of the Six Nations than what they were in this game.
Yeah, look, Gatland is new in. He's got new people around him. As you said, Tom, I think you were surprised about seeing how much of sort of the Pivac style game was there. And that's probably more so down to the fact that they didn't have the time to change it.
I think they don't have the horses, Joe. They don't have them.
What they don't have is they don't have the tight five carriers
they don't really have any power forwards. Not really, when you think about it. Like guys who are big, heavy guys who can win collisions in the middle of the field. Like they don't have a whole lot of those guys. Like Dewey Lake, I think, is a guy like that, but he's injured, obviously. But yeah, it's
that's what they lack. They one thing I thought that they did quite well was their maul defense. You had the likes of Baird and Adam Baird and Adam Wynne Jones. You know, and they were able to pin the Irish maul and take away that platform from Ireland quite well. And I think that's something that Ireland will want to work on. And look at it. Wales, looking at it, I think there was almost with Dan Biggar, I felt at times he was almost spooked. Some of his decision making wasn't great. You know, there was the time where, was it the one where Gary Ringrose slipped? You could see the one where, you know, he slipped. He still managed to get up and make the tackle.
Yeah, that was great defense, but it was poor enough from Biggar as well at the same time.
Yeah, and I think Wales will get better as the Six Nations goes on. They actually have a big game coming up this Saturday where they face Scotland. And, you know, what is it? Gatland hasn't lost to Scotland in his... I think he's in his entire coaching
he's
career.
Never lost to Scotland. With Wales. Yeah. Never lost to Scotland.
That is amazing. You know,
which is,
Joe Schmidt has lost to Scotland. What?
You're just throwing that out there.
No, that's mad. That's mad. Jeez. I suppose it shows how good like that Gatland's Wales have been over the years. You know, I think that's one of the big things. Like, I think they'll be better by the end of the Six Nations.
Hmm.
Their lineup Maldy was very, very good.
Yeah.
They just kind of compressed the sides so Ireland can't really pivot that maul, forced to drive straight in. And like there's images of like Ken Owens, let's say for example, he's kind of defending open side of the maul about maybe 6 meters out, 7 meters out, scrum halves in the five channel or the blind side, let's say. And the two of them are just, there's no panic. Two of them are pure chilled. The nine is actually has his hands up as if to say, like, are they playing it or not? And Owens is just literally just standing straight up and just pointing at the blind side as if to say, like, mind that there, will you? I'm just waiting for this to finish.
Here, like, mind that over there, boy, would you?
Just keep an eye on that blind side over there for me while I deal
watch
with this.
There, would you? Leave it there.
But there's another one, and I think it's Ireland's last maul of the game before, I could be wrong, but I think it is the last maul of the game because Herring's on the back. And if you watch his feet when he slips back and he has ball at the back, then if you watch his feet, they're actually just along they're along the line of the pitch, let's say, the darker grass or whatever I don't know what you'd call that. The different shade. But his heels just don't actually move off it, regardless of how hard Ireland are trying to drive. Like his heels are actually just like it's a really good marker to show like that Ireland just haven't moved because the pitch beside him just absolutely like the cameraman doesn't need to budge. Like, so Wales's line out D was very, very good. There was one by Faletau, it was the second last one, I think. Big maul, let's say. I asked this question there the last day on Twitter, and I was kind of sorry I did. I went down a rabbit hole, but like Ireland set a maul but attack off the back quite quickly a lot of the time. I don't know if you count that as a full maul or whatever when you're looking at, but like if you're looking at a full attacking go forward maul. Ireland went for about six, but there's one where Faletau, they didn't compress the sides, and then Faletau comes in and does. And I mean, he starts at the back, doesn't change his bind, keeps going, and he absolutely ends up driving he gets real low and he ends up driving the maul like far touchline. And that's actually where the one where Josh van der Vlier lost the shoulder battle against Wales and they won that turnover, but off the resulting break, let's say. But their lineup maul was absolutely fabulous, to be fair to him.
The one thing I must say I did love as a scrum nerd was the camera angles and the camera shots of the scrums and the setups.
Did you notice the difference between Porter setup and Dave Kilcoyne setup?
Unbelievable. You're talking 45 degrees.
It's mad. Like
I put up some of the shots on Twitter. I think I had four of them. And you can actually see where it's not when he engages, it's a setup issue where Porter is actually angling in before he actually engages the opposite tight head.
I think, because I was going to ask you about this one, I think that he's doing that to stay square with Sheehan because he's giving up so much torso height to Sheehan. Because that loose head and hooker combination, that's a combo. Like I look at Sheehan's setup and he's so angled in, it's like he's trying to cheat to get up to shoulder height to stay square with Sheehan.
I had a look at it, and what I saw from it now, and again, only taking random shots and things on it, I found when I looked at it, I saw that Porter's shoulder was under Sheehan's arm. He wasn't going shoulder to shoulder with him. So he was underneath him, right? He was angling in. And I'm wondering if it's actually to do with Porter's body shape.
I was wondering. He's got such a long torso.
It's almost short torso. Yeah, he's V-shaped if you think about it, right?
Yeah.
There used to be back in the old days, we'll call them the old days. What you wanted in a prop was sloped shoulders and a big arse, so someone could push on it from behind, right? He's the opposite. He's got massive big shoulders, and he's got a tight coming down into a smaller waist.
Yeah,
and I think that gives him problems in terms of binding and angling in that to get the hip locked in there close to the second row head, and then to have the shoulder. I think there's a difference within that sort of naturally tilts him inwards on it.
And if you look at one of the scrums towards the end where they actually had James Ryan scrummaging behind him, James Ryan was matching his angle. That was the scrum that Ireland got absolutely nuked on. And Craig Casey ended up conceding the penalty, but that was a scrum penalty. That penalty came because Ireland got pumped against the head in the scrum. And I just looked at Ryan was twisted the exact same way that Ryan was twisted. And it's like, these guys are trying to just keep, they're trying to keep pressure on. Like they're just trying to keep that pressure up to try and bolster this guy. And it's, it wasn't a washout day for him, but it was quite concerning heading into this France game.
Well, yeah, I think so as well. I think it's there. There was one scrum towards the very end where they had all three front row replacements on, and you can see the difference in terms of how square they are to it. Every one of them has both shoulders open. You can see it. I would say that technically, if the referee wanted to call it, I don't think I don't think Porter is actually offering his right shoulder as a point of contact for the opposition.
Not really. No. And like Jeff, you might look at this as well. Like from like this idea of Porter scrummaging being an issue wasn't an issue for me when he was tight head, because like being a loose head is like you're scrummaging one sided.
BJ Boat, I think, put up a video of him scrummaging tight head against France a few years ago. I don't know if he saw it, but
I did.
Absolutely no budging him. Like, nope. It'd be easier to tie a rope around him, get in the car, and try and pull him off that scrum than actually scrummage against him. I suppose, how do you phrase it? Like, it is what it is now. Like, he's just going to have to take his medicine, learn to deal with it, keep the hip in, scrummage square. And, like, I mean, be it for Ireland or Leinster, like you're going to come up against these massive, massive tight head props, like that you're just going to have to learn to deal with, like. And it's something that we've been talking about for a long time. Like, how long are we talking about this subject? Like Owen, I know you talk about it a lot when Leinster play. Like, it's nothing new here. Like,
and it, no, plus it's as well, not. It's like it's not exactly costing Ireland or Leinster games at the moment, but no, it's to worry about. Well, just, you know, I don't care if Leinster lose. To be honest, I'm not bothered. But
well, we did actually say that last week as well when you weren't here.
But like, it's more like if you look at that France game, like.
That's my worry from an Irish perspective.
Ireland reckon they're, like James Lowe was talking about it during the week, he reckons they're fitter, but France are bigger. And that's fine, right? That's a fine viewpoint to have. But if you're giving France cheap entries into the 22 through scrum penalties, etc., like they'll massacre you. I think that game they had against Italy there last week where they conceded 18 penalties, absolutely not happening again. It's full, like there's absolutely no way that's going to happen again. They would have looked at, like, I mean, I genuinely swear to God, I think we talked about this last year coming up to the France game, and we said that they would look at the scrum and send on, you know, when they're talking to the ref, show the ref the pictures and be like, if this happens, it's not us, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
We discussed it. It was the Welsh match, and we said that the Welsh were hard done by in the scrum, and it was directly coming into the thing. And Ireland, they got beaten up in the scrum.
Yeah,
against France. Now you can say, "Oh, it didn't cost them the game," but it's as you say, it's you concede a scrum penalty, but then you're conceding 30, 40 meters with the kick to touch, and then you're they get the possession again.
That's exactly it. It's cheap meters that you're like. I mean, if you're that tight head prop, or if you're the front row, let's say, and I know the second row work as well. Don't get me wrong; it's not all the plaudits don't always go to just the front row. Like, but if you're that front row. And you know, okay, if I scrummage really, really hard here for the next 30 seconds, let's say, right? Or whatever it is, 20 seconds. And you say to yourself, like, I'm going to go flat out here now for 20 seconds, but I'm going to save myself the effort of 30 meters, let's say, of gameplay with just a cheap entry and, you know, a cheap 30 meters. Like, you're absolutely going to gun for it. Like, and I think, especially with the ref's preconception now, probably. It's like France will sow that seed as well. Like you guarantee it, you know, when they're talking to the ref beforehand, they'll be like, just look at this. Can you look at this? Keep an eye on this. Like they'll sow that seed. And if they come up trumps and if they find a way to force, let's say, if they find a way to force Porter's right hip out or whatever it may be and allow their tight head to get under, let's say Sheehan or Herring or Keller or whoever starts, like they'll absolutely go for it. Like absolutely, there's no doubt.
And if this is going to be a tight game, like we think, one scrum could be 3 points and that could win. That could win the game for whoever, you know? So like it's not the winning and losing of games, but in very tight games against two very well-matched teams, it can be a point of difference.
The one thing that I think we haven't seen so far is no one is saying that it's necessarily been the sole reason that Ireland have lost. But what we haven't seen is someone really go after the Irish scrum. And what I mean by that is, win a penalty, and instead of taking the kick down the touchline or
double down,
and then double down again until you get the card, until you really go after him, and sort of really push that. And I think that until we see that on maybe the 5 meter line, you know, and someone really pushing it, I think that's where it's really going to be exposed.
It's a very difficult thing to do, though, to win a scrum penalty and have the offer of 3 points, but say we're going to double down on this scrum. It's a very difficult thing to decline 3 points in the hopes of getting a card, because when you look at the card, there has to be like a clear, I don't want to say a clear infringement, but like if the referee just suddenly decides it's not the picture you think it is, well, then you've just coughed up 3 points. It's a very
I think as well, when refs see you and it looks like you're trying to milk a card, they're less likely to give it, because you've got to be awarded these as well. And that's something how many times have you seen it where a team is doubling down on the scrum, they're doubling down, and then the next scrum goes the other way.
Yeah.
How many times does that happen?
It's risk aversion. It's what's happening at the moment, because you teams stay away from the scrum. To avoid that very thing, it's very easy for us a penalty to go against you on a pure technicality, a slipped bind or whatever else, and suddenly you've lost it. Teams then use the kick to the corner and go to the line out mall, And that's changed now because they're even going risk aversion because you have to risk the throw in and catching it and doing it. Teams are actually going to the 5 meter tap and go penalty. You know, it's all about the risk aversion part to me.
Yeah, it is difficult to turn around and say like, no scrum for me, thanks. I'll take the 3 points. And it's difficult to say no to the 3 points is what I'm trying to say. And I think France Ireland is going to be so tight, and to have an opportunity. And this is the next thing, right? You can take your 3 points. You will get a scrum somewhere in the park again. Why not take the 3 and then paint that picture for the ref again? After taking the, do you know what I mean? In the next scrum, just be like, just point and be like, keep an eye on that. I don't know how you say it in French. Keep an eye on that. No, that definitely not it. But do you know what I mean? It's a case of, that was a terrible accent. It's a case of take the 3, wait for the next scrum. And then literally just, if you're the prop, just point and just be like, watch that again there, please. And that's that, you know, you have your 3 and you're painting your picture. You're having your cake and eating it literally, you know, so, or not literally. Metaphorically.
I think it's something. There's the real thing is that there's very few teams that can A, do it to Leinster, and B, do it to Ireland. Unfortunately, I think that a fully stacked France is very much one of those teams. When you've got some of the big French props, and you've got Paul Willems at tight head prop behind him, that's driving through. If you either fold inwards, you paint the bad picture, but if you stay square and try and do it, if the tight end prop gets into that seam between Porter and the hooker, that's the end of it. He's just gonna split that scrum off. I think as good as Finley Beelam has been at tight end, I think he'll be really tested within the scrum. He was excellent, I thought, against Wales. I think this will be another step up for him. He's been very good for Connacht for a long while now in the URC. And this again is a big step up from, be interested to see how he goes. I think
he's probably up against Cyril Boy, isn't he?
Yeah.
Boy is probably going to start that game, I imagine. I hate doing this with our team sheets, but Boy's a very good scrum. I know we saw what John Ryan did against Toulouse and stuff, but John Ryan's also a very, very good scrummager. So yeah. It's going to be interesting to watch that one. I think as well, there's loads of stories about doubts around Sheehan, let's say Murray. Furlong should be back. Gibson Park is out as well.
Is Furlong out, is he?
Sorry, he is. I knew that. Sorry, yeah. So you Furlong out, get Jameson Gibson Park out. There's doubts around Murray and Sheehan now as well. If those guys are out, it obviously makes, I think it's fair to say, it makes the day that small bit tougher. But I think a little bit of Andy Farrell will be like, look at all this beautiful chaos that they now have to navigate and deal with and just get over. And, you know, I think a little bit of him, I think we said the same about Munster going down to the Sharks for that last round of 16 in Europe, you know, round 3 will just be like, we'll see what these boys are made of now. I think all these little doubts and little bits of chaos, Farrell will be like, don't get me wrong, he wants to win. And I'm not saying he doesn't. And he's not willing to sacrifice the game for a little bit of chaos. It's not what I'm saying at all. But I think he'll enjoy that little bit of, we'll see, you know, how their mettle is tested in this one, and you know, how they deal
I think this gives him the chance to view guys who are more squad players within a full team setup. So he'll have to drop certain players in and see how they perform against one of the, it's first in the world against second in the world, effectively based on the rankings. First, I think it's the first time it's happened in the history of the Six Nations.
I think I built it there the last day to someone else. I was like, it's the number one team in the world on paper against probably the best team in the world on the pitch, if that makes sense.
That's a very good description of it. And I think from that point of view, Farrell will be delighted that there may be, you know, whether it's Casey who starts at 9 or whatever, he'll be able to see how these guys get on, how the likes of Finley Beelam even at tight end. He's looking at these guys now saying, okay, you're in there with the rest of the full team. Let's see how you get on. This is something that will really help them in terms of the depth, where they stand, how they know going into the World Cup in terms of rotation and things like that. And it'll put them in a good place. It'll be a big ask for them to win. I know they're at home, but I still think it's a big ask. I think France are that one team that they have the power, they have the ability to hurt Ireland in ways that other teams don't. They also have the ability to, when they do click, to play some serious ball. You just don't know what they're going to do. And they can hurt you in many different ways in terms of ball in hand. Against Italy, I didn't think France struggled a lot. I think Italy held on to the ball quite well. They took it through the phases. They attacked them and tested. I thought France didn't adapt to the referee's interpretation of the jackal and the breakdown. They struggled at times. Now, they came out with sort of two big jackal wins at various points, but they still overall struggled against it. And I think they, like Ireland as well, because Ireland conceded, was it 13 or 15 penalties? I can't remember now offhand. I think it could have been 13 penalties against Wales, and France had penalties against Italy.
18,
you know, yeah. I don't expect to see the same thing again from either team this week. And it's going to be interesting to see how France do adapt. I think they stayed in France, played on the Sunday. They stayed in Italy this week and are flying directly to Dublin for the game. They're not going back to France at all for this, to try and get the, rather than waste days traveling, they were looking to get extra training sessions in.
It makes sense logistically. Like on a personal level, it's probably difficult for players. Well, it is difficult for players to be away from family and so on and so forth and their kids. But in a little way, it's good prep for France too. You know, it's almost like a mini tour before, you know, everything. So I think it does make sense logistically. Like on a personal level, yeah, you'll miss family and stuff, and I'm not underwriting that, but there's no point flying back to France to fly back to Ireland when you can just make one jump and have an extra day's rest, because like that travel is massive. Like, and especially after that game against Italy, I imagine there were a lot of sore bodies. After the game, I was raging France played Italy first. Like, wouldn't it be great for them not to have that wake up call before playing Ireland, kind of a thing? Like, you know, wouldn't it be great if they had, like, you know, your England's or whatever, if we had them first or whatever. But listen, it is what it is. But I'm looking forward to it. I think if Ireland put out a full team, like as full as they can, let's say if Sheehan starts and if Murray starts, let's say, I'm going for an Irish win. But I'm still going to actually do that, even if, let's say, Herring starts. He's probably next in. I know Kelleher's back, but like, he hasn't played in how long, like in international boys or even in general. It's been a while for Kelleher, hasn't it?
It's been a while. Sheehan played quite a bit for Leinster.
Yeah. So it'll probably be Herring starting there, Beelam starting tight head. That's if Sheehan's unavailable, let's say. I think Herring will start. If Murray's unavailable, Casey's obviously next in. That could mean Caelan Blades on the bench.
On the bench, yeah. France.
Oh, Jesus. That thought just came to me. That'd be massive, wouldn't it? What a step. But yeah, listen, I mean, again, World Cup, or New Zealand won that 2011 World Cup with their 4-choice 10 in the final, didn't they? Steve McDonald. So sometimes that's where you have to go. Or Stephen Donald, sorry, I think I said McDonald, Stephen Donald. So sometimes you have to go to some very, very deep places to get that result, you know. So yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm going to go for an Irish win anyway. It'll be tight, like by a score, but I'm going to go for an Irish win, I think.
I'm going to go for a France win. I think Ireland Farrell has yet to beat France in the Six Nations, I think, isn't it?
I don't like stats like that. I don't know why, but I'm always like, they have no bearing. Like even like that.
No, it's not so much that, you know, all, you know, they'll just continue on. I just think the fact France are the better team. I think even despite the world rankings and things like that, I think France are the better team. France have, I think, the power up front to cause Ireland problems. I think if they get their defensive, the rush defense back in again with that power and the ability that they have to slow ball at the breakdown, they can cause Ireland a lot of problems. Then they'll have the ballers in the back line to actually go and score. So from that point of view, I'm going to go for, that's before I even look at the likes of Sheehan and Murray as doubts, which, you know, they're two very key positions for me, one scrum half. Now I know you've got Sexton who will obviously boss a game from 10, but I think Herring will bring solidity to the lineouts run. But I think again it potentially does cause some issues at scrum time. I don't think he has the same physical presence as a scrummager as the likes of Sheehan or Kelleher would have. And I'm gonna go for France by less than 7. I think Ireland are gonna lose in bonus points.
Everything you said there, I fully agree with. Like everything. I'm still gonna go with Ireland because I went for Connacht in South Africa as well. I'm just one of those people. But yeah, I agree fully with everything you said there.
Okay, so that, and Tom is going France to win as well.
Tom's going France, yeah.
Going for France. Other games this weekend then are Scotland against Wales. Again, we'll throw out the stat. Gatland never lost to Scotland. Scotland on a high after their Calcutta Cup win in Twickenham.
Scotland also haven't won the opening two rounds of the Six Nations or Five Nations since 1996.
1996,
so there's a stat for you.
They're on their first Grand Slam since, what was it, 1991, is it? 1990 or 1991?
I can't remember. Did they win the last Five Nations?
I don't even know when it changed over.
Yeah, I don't know either. This is, I feel like it's something I probably should have looked at when throwing that stat out, but I didn't. And I'm not going to make people wait this week. I sit here on my phone
looking up. What do you reckon?
I think Scotland.
I think Scotland as well. I think Wales are, they have, I think, too many problems in the tight five, lack of carriers. I think Scotland looked very good with ball in hand. I thought their kicking game and their ability to put England under pressure in Twickenham, they can cause Wales a lot of problems. And I didn't see enough from Wales that they will have the ability with that team to even steamroll the likes of Scotland. So I think Scotland should win that by 10 points or more.
Yeah, I think so too. Next one then is
England-Italy.
Sunday. That'll be an interesting one, won't it?
That will be. You know, no, it is in Twickenham. It's,
I'm going for an England win. But I just think it'll be an interesting game. Like, I think it'll be tight as a,
I think it's going to be tactically interesting because both teams seem to like, from what we saw in the first round, seem to like to play with ball in hand. They're willing to go through multiple phases on it. Try and get what they need or what they want to do in attack. I think England struggled at times to get that sort of cohesive look in their attack. And that's only natural given the short turnaround time for Borthwick. Italy have the chance because they're picking half the, or more than half, probably the Benetton side, who have been playing so well in the URC. I still don't think Italy will win, but I think that they will cause England a lot of problems. And I think with the result, like the under 20 result last week, where what was it?
They just lost by a score, wasn't it?
Like, almost last kick of the game type thing, wasn't it? To France at under 20s. the Italian and the Italian under-20s did so well last year as well. They have something coming through in Italy. It's not quite their time yet, but I think something is building. I wouldn't be surprised to see them nick a win somewhere.
Yeah,
in this Six Nations. I don't know where it is. England is a possibility if things don't go well and don't start off well for Borthwick. But I think sort of logic tells me that England should just have about enough.
Yeah,
see them through.
Yeah, same. I imagine Tom would probably go the same for the other two as well.
Yeah, we'll leave him off with that.
I think so. Is that it?
Yeah, you wanted to chat about the readers section. Yeah.
It's not it. So sorry, I forgot about that. So, folks, what we're going to actually do is we're going to open up sort of like a listener mail, I suppose. So if you want to send us an email after you listen to the episode with your thoughts and opinions, etc. And if you want to send us in an email, send a little listener mail. What we want to start doing is picking one every week and reading it out online and discussing it a little bit as well, just to kind of get a bit more involvement, I suppose. So from the listener side. So if you want to send in an email, you can at provincialstateofmind@gmail.com. It would be a more formal email address, but nobody sponsors the show yet, so it's just a Gmail one. But you can send in your thoughts and opinions, or you know, on anything rugby wise, you know, and we can read it out. We'll pick one at random, read it out, and then have a little discussion around it for a couple of minutes as well at the end. So
yeah, and of course, if you want to sponsor the podcast, you can also email in.
That would be better again. Yes.
Yeah. Always willing to accept money. So we'll round it up there, folks. Thank you very much for listening to our ramblings and for supporting the podcast. Please do rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you listen, as it really helps. And also be sure to share the podcast on social media. Have a good week, and the three of us will be back next week to chat again.